Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:56 p.m. and today is August 9th. And when we look at markets today, I think one of the most significant moves was in gold, and the price was down heavily off the open this morning. Or well, it was actually at least in local time, it was right at the end of yesterday. And this kind of downward accelerations, they've certainly they're jarring. And we've had a year in which there have been a lot of downward dynamics. And this has been a downtrend that's been in play now for a year already. But the magnitude of the decline isn't especially large. Obviously, it's a pullback from over $2,000 down to $1,700. So it's a significant move. And a reaction in the order of about 15% overall, which isn't particularly large. But the reality is that we're back in the region of the lows from March and April, and we certainly have a short-term oversold condition right now. And there were a large number of people who were very alarmed by the pullback on Friday and liquidated positions this morning. So that's certainly signs of panicky action, and sentiment towards gold has become progressively more bearish, and people are becoming worried about what do central banks actually mean when they say that assistance needs to be tapered. Are they in fact going to follow through on their original contention that they were going to allow inflation to run hot? One thing that I think is relevant is when we think about the negative real yields being the primary tailwind for gold. So this is the Federal Reserve's constant maturity real yield, and it's now in the region of negative 106 basis points. But it did pop on the upside over the course of the last few sessions. And that obviously then has got people thinking about Treasury yields as well. Because the 10-year Treasury yield is now back in the region of the upper side of this approximately 4-week range. And it's the lower side of the overhead trading range. So this has been a really quite consistent decline in yields. From the peak back in March, we've had four ranges. Each one has encountered resistance in the region of the lower side of the overhead one. And they have tended to dip into one another, but only very mildly. So now the big question is, are we going to see upside follow through tomorrow? Would that break the consistency of this downtrend? Because obviously, the pullback in gold didn't happen in isolation. So we do have big questions here about exactly in which direction is monetary and fiscal policy likely to move. Because on the one hand, we might say, well, the broad global economy is recovering from the pandemic. And despite the continued worry about the Delta variant and worries about just what it means in terms of rising number of cases, fatalities, and hospitalizations, well, all of those factors are being heavily watched, and lots of people are becoming alarmed at the pace of, at the rate at which cases are spreading, yet the stock market remains quite sanguine. So back in March of last year, the stock market was anything but sanguine. And I think a good part of the reason for that is because we now have vaccines. So Moderna's share price is accelerating higher. And it was up in a quite aggressive manner in here today. Now, this is on the back of good news. So Australia has permissioned the shot, and the efficacy data continues to support it, so this is still looking quite encouraging. So this continues to be an accelerating trend. Now, it would really require a clear downward dynamic in order to signal a peak of more than short-term significance, but certainly a lot of good news is being priced in. But I think the primary rationale for why good news is being priced in is because it's looking increasingly likely that this is not a one-hit phenomenon, but that we are likely to need a progressively more shots, and that we'll have booster shots, just like we get an annual flu vaccine, we'll get an annual or semi-annual COVID vaccine as well. So that's creating a new vaccine industry pretty much out of nowhere. And because it is more serious than the seasonal flu, and obviously people are going to argue about how much more serious it is, but the reality is that most people get the seasonal flu vaccine, and they're more than likely going to get the seasonal COVID vaccine as well. So that's one of the reasons why Moderna is doing well, but it's also the reason why the stock market remains reasonably sanguine. But the other part of the reason why the stock market is sanguine is because stock market investors pretty much believe that the pace of earnings momentum is going to persist, and that central banks, they might be talking a good game of removing monetary assistance, but that the reality of doing that is going to be a bit more difficult than it sounds. And I think there is probably a good reason for that. We know what it's like to withdraw liquidity because we had plenty of examples of it in 2017 and 18. And it can initially be jarring, and then the economy has to at least give evidence that it's going to be okay, and then they will continue. And we haven't really yet seen a big downward dynamic on Wall Street, but the market hasn't gone anywhere for 2 weeks either. So as yields continue to rise, and the big question is, will that trend get broken? And I do think that it's important to bear in mind that bonds are as much about supply and demand as any other market. And I think relying on one intermarket relationships is pro and then what they tell us about future inflation probably isn't the most fruitful way of looking at these kinds of interrelationships, because I don't think it's really about inflation why bond yields are rising, but rather it's much more about the impact of government policy. Because with this announcement from on climate change in here today, well, they're talking about an accelerating pace of global warming. And the only thing that that signals is expensive. It's going to be extraordinarily expensive to retool the entire global economy. So there will be a lot of domestic issues talking about the vital need to cut back on carbon emissions and to become carbon neutral economies within the next, and to make significant strides towards being carbon neutral economies within the next decade. But the reality is that in order to achieve carbon neutral goals, massive investments will need to be made in the electricity and transportation sectors of both India and China. And that carries geopolitical consequences. So I don't think anyone is lining up to donate hundreds of billions of dollars to China. They don't need it. India, on the other hand, could potentially be a very significant beneficiary of climate change investment. And of course, a good part of the reason for that is because it's likely to be one, if any of these long-term prognostications about Indian groundwater and the dearth of available potable water and rising sea levels. Well, India in particular, and most particularly the greater India area, including Bangladesh are going to have a rather significantly difficult time. So obviously they have an incentive to encourage inward investment in their electricity generation sector. And of course, then there will be a big argument about vested interests in the country as well. But the Nifty index continues to hold its breakout, and this remains an uptrend overall. And if we do go ahead and invest a significant amount of money in retooling the global economy, well, then that is inflationary, because the global economy has been predicated, at least mostly, on the view that profit and efficiency are good things. Whereas if we're going to introduce additional motives and change the focus away from profitability and towards climate, well, then that's less efficient by definition. And then, of course, there will be a big argument about how efficient various modes of producing electricity are, but and that, of course, will then be heavily dependent on technological innovation and economies of scale, all of which are extremely expensive. So we may see the downtrend in yields broken. And then the big question is, will it be because there's an increasing burden from the Delta variant in the USA, or will it be because of the anticipation that there's going to be a lot more spending and deficits? Because the one big factor at present that's been priced into the bond market is that the Federal Reserve is going to be issuing $2 trillion less of bonds in 2022 than they did in 2021. So that's a significant contraction in the quantity of dollars being produced. And that has helped to support the US dollar, which is rebounding here and finding support in the region of the trend mean and coming back up into the region of the peaks from over the course of the last 10 to 11 months. Well, I'm on the record as thinking that this is a big top formation, but that is really being questioned right now because this is looking increasingly like a bullish consolidation above the trend mean. And if it breaks out to new recovery highs, well, then that is something that is weighing on the gold price overall. But of course, if the dollar is rallying, it's because there's less supply. And that is certainly helping it to strengthen against other currencies. When we then think about the Asia dollar index, well, it is looking susceptible to some additional downside, and it is distributing here below the trend mean. And the Chinese renminbi was weaker in here as well. So China is going for a full lockdown in terms of its response to the growing threat from the Delta variant, and they've closed down about half the country. And certainly, we have first-hand reports of factories having difficulty finding workers because they generally rely on inland provinces to supply workers to factories around the coast. And right now, travel is being locked down. So it's creating the same kinds of slowdown in manufacturing that we had in 2020. And that's going to create supply bottlenecks because there are a lot of businesses right now that are running on low inventories, and they're relying on China to boost those inventories, and they may not be able to with the lockdowns that are currently underway. Then China also announced over the course of the last few days that they're basically closing down education of English within schools. And together with the banning of tutoring, what that means is there will be fewer students who will be able to do well in exams, and Then there will also be fewer students with the requisite English the skills to get places in overseas universities. So, in many respects, China is not just locking down the economy, they're closing in the economy. And this is I think a developing situation. And the bounce that we had on the Chinese stock market today doesn't fully illustrate just what's going on, because the stock market does tend to be highly politically motivated. And then there's also increasing talk about introducing a property tax. China doesn't have one. And then obviously the question is, how much will the property tax be, and what impact would that have on speculation in the market? Because if one can invest in property without having to pay property taxes, well, then the cost of holding multiple properties increases substantially depending on how a property tax is framed. And the CSI 300 is certainly firming, and it's coming up towards the upper side of that overhead trading range. But then the question is, how much further can it rally? Because certainly there is evidence of some support from sovereign wealth funds, and as the administration in China have a vested interest in ensuring that we don't have a panicky environment. But they don't want to see a significant acceleration higher either. So it still remains a rather volatile environment overall. Now, when we think about, if we just simply think about what's happening in the precious metals sector, well, both gold and silver had pulled back sharply and then rebounded from their lows. And this is not all that unusual. We have often seen in the course of the bull market up from 2000 to 2011 that both gold and silver pull back sharply in the latter stages of these longer consolidations. Now, silver is below its trend mean and in the region of the lows from back in October and November, and it was off its lows in here today, but still holding this breakout from this long-term base formation. And I do want to just take a moment to highlight the kind of volatility that we can see in the silver market. There have been more than a few occasions when it just pulls back in an extremely violent manner and then pulls back below the trend mean and subsequently rebounds and breaks out and then goes on another one of its advances. And we've seen this kind of occasion on numerous times where we get this just tantalizingly close to breaking out to new all-time highs in 2007, and then breaking downwards and shaking everyone out and terrifying all of the bulls, only to close off the low and then rebound over the next few months and get back up towards the highs and then wobble again and then break out. So we've had these kinds of occasions plenty of times. And again, it's almost normal that we get these deep consolidations, we get these tests, and then we get months of consolidation afterwards and then subsequently a breakout. So when I refer to myself as being conditioned to think that these kinds of shakeouts are buying opportunities, that's what I'm talking about. That I think that it's quite normal to see these kinds of shakeouts in precious metals. And they really are scary, and it makes it difficult to be bullish. But we have to at least consider that it's extremely unlikely that we're moving back into a positive real interest rate environment. And what we've had over the last while has been just the move from historically wide negative real interest rates to somewhat less wide. Central banks do not want to raise interest rates. They're not going to raise interest rates until they have to. And they might like to taper assistance, but one of the most important reasons that they're tapering assistance is because the federal government in the USA is going to issue fewer bonds. And they're all worried about rising interest rates and particularly rising yields because of the knock-on effect that that has for funding costs for governments. And if governments are spending more money to fund the debt, well, then that is more money that has to be raised in taxes and less money that's getting spent on productive social programs. And that's deflationary. So the big question then is how can they act like they don't want or that they're taking inflationary measures are in increasingly inflationary figures seriously without actually tampering with the global economic expansion. So they're doing a very good job of talking the market down. Until they actually act, well, we won't really have any real evidence that they're serious about it. And I think there's going to be a very tricky environment in the USA because the speed with which they taper is going to move, in all likelihood, in lockstep with the pace of issuance. And then it'll be about a net figure, about whether there is, in fact, a net assistance level or not. And we're still months away from that, and but I do think that that's what the precious metal markets are starting to price in right now. Of course, if this is a shakeout similar to the other shakeouts we've had during bull markets in the past, well, then the lows will hold today, and we'll start to see prices climbing back up over the next few weeks and months. But certainly, it is for the bulls to prove at the current time. And I think with that, when we think about gold and silver having had a big shakeout, well, perhaps we also then should be thinking about the continued strength in the cryptocurrency markets. So, Bitcoin was up $2,500 today, and it's now pushing out of that short-term range. And it's above the simple moving average and well above the exponential moving average. And it would need a clear downward dynamic to check momentum in the short term. Well, I've been quite clear. I didn't think that Ethereum would be able to sustain a breakout without Bitcoin taking part, but Bitcoin is taking part, and Ethereum was up through 3,000 in here today. So, continuing to extend its breakout, and it has now clearly broken through and above the peaks put in May and June. So this continues to look like a recovery overall. So there's potential here for additional upside. And what we've seen over the last few days has been that the limited supply argument has been burnished, and that's been enough of a catalyst to bring people back into the market. But there might be an additional reason, and it's that the limited supply argument is simple. It's an easy thing to explain, and you have a trend that's on the way to and breaking out. And then when we look at the inert environment on Wall Street and the difficult environment that we have in the precious metals and the uncertain environment that we have for the oil sector and the questions about the virus and the questions about the outlook for climate change, well, then that argument for investing in crypto really is simpler. And the limited supply argument is something that anybody can get their head around. Whereas the competing narratives with regard to interest rates and the outlook for growth and inflation, well, that's a lot more complicated and it's a lot muddier. So that might be a good reason why Bitcoin and Ethereum are attracting interest. What I find also particularly interesting is that in order to achieve a carbon neutral or anything even remotely close to a carbon neutral global economy, there's going to have to be a massive commodity bull market. And we can argue about substitution risk in things like oil or in natural gas or copper, but those are medium term in nature. and copper prices were off their lows in here today, and they're continuing to hold this incremental sequence of higher reaction lows over the course of the last 6 months. So there's, I think, potential here that we're going to see additional upside tomorrow. But again, this is another sector where it is for the bulls to prove. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.